Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Welcome again to Gamble On, the weekly gambling podcast presented by USBets.com. I'm Eric Raskin, USBets Managing Editor and Media Director, and I'm joined by our senior analyst, Pulitzer Prize finalist John Brennan. And I'm not totally sure about this, John, but I think Major League Baseball has to pay everyone who's ever bet on a game a lack of integrity fee in the wake of the Astros scandal. Is that how this works?
Yeah, Eric, I'm totally baffled because a lot of this scandal dates back to 2017, right? Mm-hmm. But that was almost a year before the U.S. Supreme Court opened the door for states beyond Nevada to offer full-scale sports betting. Now, I was told that scandals would only happen if other states got to offer legal sports betting. So that's my confusion. luckily, no one was betting on Major League Baseball games in 2017, except a handful of tourists and a couple of locals in Las Vegas. So it's really not a big deal, Eric, although I'm not totally sure about that either.
Yeah, I guess we're not quite sure about any of this. And I'm going to contradict you because there had to have been some sports betting in 2017 because Mattress Mack was hedging back then as well, from what I've heard. So I think all the people who got free mattresses from Mattress Mack in 2017 probably have to return them now. I would think that that's how this should work as well.
Yeah, there's a lot to play out here, that's for sure.
I have to say, I feel bad for Astros fans. Their joy is retroactively tainted forever. Of all these sort of championships with an asterisk that have been out there over the years, this feels like the most hollow championship now of my lifetime. And meanwhile, Pete Rose is absolutely right that this is way worse than anything he ever did. But I would say this, John, just to be safe, going forward, instead of your usual $2, I recommend you limit your baseball bets to $1 until you can be sure the game has integrity again.
I know horse racing has a $2 minimum. I'm not sure what the minimum is on these sports betting sites.
Online sports bets, you can go pretty low. There might not be a minimum. Maybe start at a penny and see if they accept the bet.
I'll try that.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you to everyone out there for joining us for episode number 74 of Gamble On. If you missed any of our previous 73 episodes, they're all available on SoundCloud and on iTunes and the Apple Podcast app. Please subscribe so you never miss an episode. We don't collect an integrity fee or a royalty, but we do collect 5-star ratings.
Oh, absolutely, Eric. And coming up a little later on the show, we're going to be joined by Michigan State Representative Brent Hyden as he takes a well-earned victory lap, frankly, on Gamble On after successfully leading the push to make sports betting and online gaming legal in his state. We'll talk to Brent about getting his bill across the finish line, some of the compromises that were made along the way, and what the timeline now looks like in Michigan. But first, yes, it has been another busy news week in the world of gambling, so let's get to it.
Here's your Gamble On News of the Week, an inside look at the biggest stories in the world of gambling.
When we talk to Brant Hyden in a few minutes, one topic we will surely discuss with him is having a previous version of his bill vetoed by the governor at the end of 2018. Well, the same thing that happened in Michigan a little over a year ago just happened in Maine. A sports betting bill cleared the Maine legislature back in June of 2019. It was widely assumed Maine would become the first state in 2020 to legalize sports betting, but Governor Janet Mills surprised the industry by vetoing it last Friday. The law that reached her desk was generally well received in the gaming industry. There were reasonable tax rates of 10% for retail and 20% for mobile. The law allowed for up to 11 retail licenses, and mobile sports books could get licensed without a retail partner. In short, it was shaping up to be the most open, competitive sports betting market in New England, which isn't saying much, but still. Nevertheless, Mills vetoed it, saying she's unconvinced the people of Maine are ready for legal sports betting. I'm inferring that she feels they're perfectly ready for the illegal sports betting they currently have access to. Anyway, it's expected that there will be an attempt to override the veto, but that would require a two-thirds vote in each chamber, which I don't think insiders have much confidence about. John, if you read Mills's whole letter, any insights on why she vetoed the bill, and would you expect that this will play out like Michigan did, with legalization coming just a year or so after it seemed poised to?
You know, first I want to make some heads explode, Eric. You know, many of our subscribers are involved in the overall gaming or sports betting specific industry, and they may have missed a nugget in Mills' two-page letter, which I did read. She said that while she understands that sports betting legalization would bring in some revenue, the same could be said for allowing wagering on, wait for it, betting on the weather, spelling bees, and school board elections. So for those surviving listeners, I'll add, Mills did make a valid point about many states underperforming wide-eyed revenue projections. Maine is not going to get rich on this, and neither is really any state. So clearly advocates in that state have to educate her on the volume of illegal betting already occurring in her state, the lack of consumer protection on that, and the fact that states can't break even by ignoring sports betting legalization. Maine will only go backwards, as many of her constituents in southern Maine clearly are going to cross the border to New Hampshire to wager there instead. So she can't just, stand pat. It's going backwards. New Hampshire revenues this year will make Mills take notice, I think. Her opposition doesn't seem as intractable as, say, New York Governor Cuomo on mobile betting.
Yeah. But you know, you mentioned that those, she was pointing out in her letter that some of the revenues are not as advertised. Tax revenues in other states have fallen far short of projections. I look at that and I think she's basically overly focused on Rhode Island's temporary struggles, because most of the recent trends are toward states collecting a nice chunk of change. Gary Rotstein just wrote a piece for us in the past week explaining why all those headlines early in 2019 about sports betting coming in under expectation have proven to be kind of a rush to judgment, and it's really all trending in the right direction, or was, you know, as 2019 was coming to an end. Her whole letter gets my blood boiling, really. Didn't make my head explode, but it got my blood boiling. You know, she's saying we need to do more research, we need to figure out the right approach, we need to protect the children, etc. The research has been done. The legislature passed a pretty good approach. And if underage kids want to bet offshore, that's neither here nor there. This won't change that. This is just BS politics here, from what I can tell. But on the bright side, hey, it's only Maine, a state with a population of about 1.3 million. So in that regard, at least, it's not as big a deal as the veto a year earlier in Michigan.
You're not going to remember the Maine, Eric, are you?
I'm not. And I guess we're continuing our trend of insulting some of these smaller states. We've brushed off Delaware many times, and now I guess Maine is falling into a similar category.
Yeah, well, I'm going to have to live with it.
Yeah. All right. While the forward momentum in Maine has been reversed, we do have some positive movement building for sports betting in another state, Kentucky. On Wednesday, a bill was amended to allow wagering on in-state college teams, and that bill advanced out of committee and to the House floor. The college issue wasn't the only amendment. Kentucky's bill also contains an in-person registration requirement, and while that wasn't eliminated this week, an expiration date in 2022 was added, so in a couple of years, it will be possible to open a mobile sports betting account remotely. The bill still has a long way to go, but there's some degree of optimism as compared to last year when it went nowhere, because in 2020, There's a new governor who supports sports gambling, and it needed a 3/5 supermajority in 2019 to pass, but it only needs to break 50% in a 2020 vote. Also of note, the bill includes online poker. What do you think, John? With a new governor this enthusiastic for sports betting, is Kentucky looking like one of the best bets to legalize sports betting in 2020?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Eric. I mean, this is a horse racing state. They are a little bit familiar with gambling.
Right.
And as far as these 1- and 2-year in-person sign-up mandates, before that they sunset, I know the industry hates them, but people need to keep their eyes on the prize. I mean, I had a number of interviews with New Jersey State Senator Ray Lesniak in 2011, 2012. You know, the state was preparing to move forward with a referendum, and then a state law that barred betting on in-state colleges was part of it. Lesniak said the main point was that they needed to pass a law that would lure the sports leagues into filing a lawsuit that would, you know, I'll describe it as opening the door for the state to fire a rock from a slingshot that would topple Goliath PASPA, that 1992 federal law that gave Nevada its monopoly. And guess what? It took 6 years, but it worked. So if the price of admission is appeasing some state legislators who, like Lesniak, were Rutgers alums there, so be it. And how'd that work out? Pretty well. And I think similarly, like a 20-year time horizon, a mild speed bump against immediately maximizing first-year sports betting in some state, it's not worth getting rattled over.
Yeah, and that's exactly what it is. It's a mild speed bump. It'll make the revenues a little lower than they could be for what will ultimately be looked upon as a brief stretch of time, a year or two before the market can take certain steps to reach full maturity. But I'm right with you that shouldn't be a deciding factor in anything. I share your optimism about Kentucky in 2020. Although, to the little pessimist in me does take note that if it doesn't happen in 2020, it isn't really a possibility until 2022 due to that odd year, even year rule. But Governor Andy Beshear is really enthusiastic about sports betting. He made his position clear on the campaign trail. He's standing behind it. He said flat out the other day, quote, "I fully support it and we should pass it." And the bill cleared committee by a 19-0 vote. So I don't want to get overexcited, but the positive signs are there in abundance.
I think it's a done deal. It's happening.
Oh, all right. The Brennan lock.
That's right. The Brennan lock.
All right. For our final topic this week, I will open the floor to traveling man John to talk about his latest trip to the Nickel G's conference in San Diego. John wrote about horse racing, sports betting, and the lottery, among other topics discussed at the conference. You can find all those articles on usbets.com. John, what makes this conference unique among the many industry events, if anything, and what were some of the highlights of the weekend?
Yeah, well, Eric, Nickel G stands for the National Council of Legislators from Gaming States, and it's unfortunate they have to spend a weekend in January every year in places like San Diego this year and New Orleans the previous year, and I'm stuck following them. It's a rough life, but yeah. And more seriously, it's a good mix of some cutting-edge legislators who are well-versed in sports betting. This week's guest, Brant Eyden, was in attendance, for instance, as well as others who are kind of gambling 101 track people, and that's important. One Midwestern legislator who was hearing about Missouri's lotteries mulling whether to try to get parlay betting for them in their state and then having the state casinos handle the traditional sports bets. And this legislator felt that was very risky because he knew that a bad month of big payouts from parlays might leave the state making no money at all for education and other worthy causes. And, you know, from a 101 perspective, that's not a crazy sentiment, right? Then it was explained to him that over the course of the year, parlays, of course, are not really a risk at all, and they kind of tend to pay out double what traditional bets do. So right. That's an education thing, you know. Then there was an Ohio horse racing official. He noted that of the 37 racehorse deaths in the state last year, all but 3 of them were thoroughbreds. That's not surprising if you know the horse racing industry. But for a legislator in a state where standardbreds, who are the harness racing horses, dominate the landscape, that means the serious issues involving those thoroughbred racing deaths at Santa Anita Park in California, it doesn't mean they have to panic and pass needless legislation in their state if they're more of a harness racing side. So for all the fancy dinners and drinks that some of these elected officials presumably did, I don't hang with that crowd, but the dozen or so panels over 3 days, they really offered a valuable opportunity for educating legislators who, to be fair, they also have more important issues to worry about than gaming.
Yeah, I suppose so. But I feel like, you know, these various sports betting panels are all pretty similar at this point. So among the things that you wrote this week, the one that stood out most to me was the one about the lottery. That was something sort of different and interesting. And just to see those revenue numbers, $85 billion for the lottery over the previous fiscal year compared to $42 billion for commercial casinos and just $11 billion, I say just $11 billion, but just $11 billion for movie box office receipts. That's, you know, I don't play the lottery, so I don't ever really think about how enormous it is, but 7 or 8 times bigger than the whole movie theater business. That's something right there.
Yeah, I heard decades ago that the lottery is a tax on people who are bad at math, and I've been able to shake that one ever since, so I don't play the lottery either.
Movie theater snacks are also a tax on people who are bad at math and don't or bad at stuffing things into their pockets before they enter the movie theater. I was thinking about that. It's an interesting trade-off for you, you have to work and travel all weekend, but you do get to spend that time in San Diego when it's winter on the East Coast. So not bad. I'm heading to Atlanta today and was hoping to enjoy some similar nice weather. But then I looked it up. It's going to be in the 50s and rainy in Atlanta. So not great. Still better than the 30s in Philadelphia, but I'm not quite going to San Diego.
Well, on Saturday, it was 70 in North Jersey, and it was 65 in San Diego for me. it was a lot sunnier, to be honest, so I think I did okay.
Yeah, you can sacrifice 5 degrees for just that nice San Diego sun.
It's time to welcome a special guest from the world of gambling. Let's get to the Gamble On interview.
It wasn't easy to get over the finish line, but sports betting and online gambling are coming to the state of Michigan in 2020. Representative Brant Eyden was the driving force behind the legislation that was signed into law by Governor Gretchen Whitmer on December 20th, and he joins us now on the podcast to talk about the roller coaster ride to this point and where the state's gaming industry goes from here. Representative Eyden, welcome to Gamble On.
Hey, great to be with you. Yes, it was certainly a ride.
So let's talk about that ride. Let me start by backing things up 1 year. In December 2018, a similar bill passed the House and the Senate and got vetoed by the outgoing governor. How surprised and disappointed were you in that moment? And how much did that loom over you in 2019 and affect your confidence that you could, in fact, go all the way with sports betting and online gaming?
It will be one of those days that I will always remember. I can tell you exactly where I was and exactly what I was doing when I got the call from the governor's office. That's how disappointed I was. I will say this, you know, it's been 4 years, you're correct, since we've been working on this. And, you know, it was 2 years to get us to that point of the veto. And what was disappointing was that along that entire process, we had heard nothing from the former administration. You know, obviously they were hanging their hat on the issue of lottery and impacting state revenue as it relates to the school aid fund, but that was really never a concern, although it was referenced in the veto letter, it never came up. And so we were working the issue, and I really thought all I had to do was get a majority of my colleagues to support the issue and the governor would be on board. Unfortunately, that was not the case. And so it was surprising, and it forced us to start the process all over again. However, one of the things I'm very proud about is I believe that the package of bills today, as it stands, the bills that were signed are actually better than the bills that were originally introduced. And so, you know, it may have taken me a year longer to do it, unfortunately, but I think that we ended up in a better spot, but it was certainly disappointing throughout that happened.
Gotcha.
Yeah, Brant, I was wondering about that. You know, was there any one particular state that you and your colleagues tried to emulate in setting regulations? And kind of what you referred to is, you know, I guess it might have been a little helpful to sort of draft behind a dozen or so states, even though that wasn't the original plan.
It really was. I will tell you that because, you know, one bill we didn't have in the package was an actual sports betting bill. The bill that we had that sort of dealt with that issue, and really it only referenced it in one byline, which directed gaming control to just set the regulations, was in the Internet Gaming Bill. And so I didn't have a robust sports betting bill. And so really what we were able to do by sort of following those other states was come up with some better regulations. And, you know, we sort of took that from what other states were doing well. And I believe, again, my bill, my name's on it, but I think we have one of the best bills in the country.
Now, obviously, a lot of the focus nationally and within Michigan has been on the sports betting aspect of things. But you also did get the online casino and poker and all that other stuff lumped in there. Or I shouldn't say lumped in, because it's, you know, everything has its own categories. But I'm a poker guy, having loved playing online poker off and on for the last 15 years. What's your level of optimism that players in Michigan will be pooled with players in other states, such as my home state of Pennsylvania, in the near future to create a more robust national online poker scene? Or is Michigan purely focused on just, at the moment, just get it up and running in state and worry about player pooling later?
Well, that player pooling was certainly a part of the conversation. I will say this, it was more so a part of the conversation from the early onset of the bills than it was towards the end, but it's always been in the forefront of my mind. I mean, if we really want to drive a player to that market and we want to make those pots larger and we want to get players involved, it has to be multi-state. I think it'll come in due time. I think this is going to take, first and foremost, getting up and getting going in the state, a budget cycle or so for the administration and the legislature to sort of get their feet underneath them with how much money this is actually bringing in revenue, making sure that it's not undercutting lottery, and then sort of get into, okay, how can we expand this? One of the conversations we have had is, you know, the governor's office was very concerned throughout these negotiations, again, with the focus being on lottery, that there were no sort of progressive multi-state pots, and that would take players, again, away from playing the online lottery and potentially impact that school aid fund. I believe that once this thing plays out and once we can sort of, you know, all coalesce behind the concept that this doesn't impact iLottery, I think that you're actually going to see potentially further legislation that may, you know, start to delve into that realm a little bit. So I think it's coming. I think it will be in due time, though. I mean, I wouldn't say it's going to be right away this year, but hopefully within the next couple of years, you could definitely see that.
Okay. And just speaking of in due time, as just a more general thing or a more immediate thing, do you have any sense at this point of what the rough time frame is for just for when any of the first sites in the state will launch? Are you getting any sense of what people in Michigan can expect at this point, timing wise?
You know, I'm still very confident that it should be right around that March timeline.
Okay.
That NCAA basketball tournament is very big. I've had conversations with our regulators, and they believe that from an internal perspective, they can be ready. The question becomes, can the operators get their paperwork in time and actually get themselves up and running? I think it's likely that you'll see retail books come online first. Mm-hmm. But mobile will soon follow. You know, our regulators are very focused on getting us up and running with the mobile piece. But I do think that retail piece will come in a lot sooner once those regulations are established. So I'm confident for March, and I'm looking forward to betting on my Spartans.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Brent, because I'm kind of – it's on my mind that you know, I noticed it happened here first in New Jersey, basically. But it's been around a lot of states where it seems like every sports betting-minded state has been grappling with this issue of whether to allow wagering on games involving colleges within the state. So maybe you can explain to our listeners, how did that play out in Michigan? Was it one of the more difficult angles to reach agreement on, or was it something – there's a consensus? It seems to vary wildly from state to state.
You know, what's very interesting about that is because Michigan being a Big Ten state, of course, and college athletics being such a big thing in our state between Michigan State. I mean, these are big schools, a lot of followers, a lot of alumni, people that are interested in placing wagers on those games. So the interesting thing was it never really came up. It was just always sort of assumed that you'd be able to place wagers on those games. Obviously, you know, we verified that. I mean, I went around talking to, hey, do we have any concerns with this? And really, at the end of the day, no stakeholders, and I didn't have pushback from my colleagues on that particular issue. In fact, many of them said, can't wait to bet on my Wolverines. Can't wait to bet on my Spartans. I mean, it's a, like I say, you know, big college state with a lot of schools that are all interested in potentially, you know, the process. And I think that, you know, at the moment, and as more states get up and going, and as we sort of see what happens with this, I think you will see groups like the NCAA potentially get involved in drafting the language and that sort of thing. But they don't have an official position yet. And so from that perspective, we didn't really hear anybody with any sort of real opposition to that. And I think that that's going to make it even more exciting for our state and at the end of the day, bringing more revenue.
Yeah. Now, my state of New Jersey is a Big Ten state also, well, sort of, with Rutgers.
Oh, really?
So,
you guys, what do you guys got out there? Oh, yeah, Rutgers. That's right. Well, you know what,
yeah,
no,
but I can't bet on – I can't take Rutgers plus 38.5 against Michigan or any of that, which is roughly where the line was. I think Ohio State was like 52 or something was favored. But
was.
I can't do that
in New Jersey. That because I won on that game because I took the points. It was like 55 or something when I bet it. And I'm like, I got to take those points just for fun.
Wow, great stuff. Well, it's been a real pleasure speaking to you, Brant, and thanks so much for coming on the podcast, and of course congratulations on getting your legislation passed. These are exciting times in Michigan.
Hey, thanks guys, I really appreciate it. Take care.
All right, thanks, Brant.
Two men, $10,000. Will they run it up or blow it all? It's time to check in on the Gamble On Bankroll.
We'll get to our NFL playoff picks shortly, but first we update our betting bankroll, and we took a small hit this week, nothing major. John broke exactly even, winning us $100 on his 49ers-Vikings under bet, but losing $100 on his Clemson/over 70 points parlay. And he can't even blame the parlay aspect since both legs lost. One of my bets last week was on a boxing match in February, so we'll have to wait on that. But my one result that's in was my bet on Lamar Jackson at plus 650 to be the leading rusher of the weekend. And it didn't win, but I feel good about the process. He rushed for 143 yards. That was the second highest total of the weekend. He would have won the bet for me if not for Derrick Henry's insane 195-yard day. But alas, we dropped $50 there instead. On the bright side, John, your $30 bet on the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl at 11-1. I don't want to jinx it, but it's looking promising. So with the $50 loss, we are now in the red by $490. We have $885 on hold in futures bets. So we have $8,625 available to bet this week, and you're up first.
Yeah, I'll start with, you know, Derrick Henry, the Titans, instead of the plus 550, I'm getting plus 1,000 on him scoring the first touchdown in the Chiefs-Titans game. It's a DraftKings promotion, so 50 to win 500 on Henry. I'd suggest people take a look at that one because that's a pretty good deal.
All right. I don't know if we've ever done a bet using the promotions or odds boosts available, but hey, they're out there, so why not? I have been taking advantage of those on DraftKings myself. I think I've done maybe four of them over the last couple of weeks, and one of them hit. So, you know, at 10-1, that's not bad. But that's a pretty good one there on Henry, except for the fact that I'm not so confident that his team will be the first team to score. But it's still a 10-1. That's certainly a good price. Just like last week when I bet on a particular player to lead the weekend in rushing yards, FanDuel is offering the same props this week on passing, rushing, and receiving. And I think Patrick Mahomes' price for passing yards is a little too good. He's only minus 110 out of four quarterbacks. And consider the other options. Ryan Tannehill is averaging 80 yards per game through two postseason games. Now, the game script will be different if they fall behind in Kansas City. But still, I don't see him coming close to 300 yards in the air. Same for Jimmy Garoppolo. San Francisco has a strong running game, and in the regular season, Garoppolo averaged 248.6 passing yards per game, 17th in the league. The only real threat here to me is Aaron Rodgers, but it won't be easy against the 49ers defense. So I like Mahomes a lot in this one. I expect him to throw for more than 300 yards, and I don't think any of the other quarterbacks will. So let's risk $110 to win 100.
All right, that does sound pretty logical. I've got Jason Kokrak for 100 at plus 200 to finish in the top 20 at La Quinta on the PGA Tour this weekend. This tournament has been renamed the American Express, which is kind of a lame name for a tournament, but there we are. Kokrak's a big brute who should crush these easy courses. Yes, courses. There also were amateurs involved, and the whole thing's a little bit of a mess. But Kokrak has finished 8th and 18th here the last 2 years. And if you ever play him at huge odds to win an event, by the way, hit cash out if he has a lead at the back nine begins, because he will spit the bit every time. But he's comfortable getting into the top 20, and so I am too.
Okay. Well, now we're back to a tradition from last year of you betting on golfers I've never heard of. This is one guy I've never heard of before, but I'll take your word for it that even if he implodes at the end, he's He's solid enough to make the top 20 there. Jason Kokrak. Cool. I don't even know how that's spelled. I'll have to look that up when we're done.
K-O-K-R-A-K.
Oh, okay. There we go.
He right looks here. Like a guy named Kokrak. Like, that would be a good name for him. Yeah.
The name fits him. Okay. all right. For our fourth and final bet this week, let's do an NBA bet. We have the Clippers against the Magic tonight. Orlando is riding high off their win over the Lakers. I assume a letdown on the second end of a back-to-back is coming, but the spread, Clippers by 11.5, it's a little intimidating. So instead of picking the Clippers to cover, I will take the over on points for Kawhi Leonard. The line is set at 27.5. With Paul George out, in the last three games, Kawhi has gone off for 36, 30, and 43. Even though it costs us -118 to take the over, I think it's worth it. So let's risk $118 to win 100. Kawhi Leonard over 27.5 points tonight. And we finish with our NFL playoff picks, where John is coming off a perfect 4-0 week to my good but imperfect 3-1. That puts John in the lead at 6-2 to my 5-3, which means also at 6-2, John, you have locked up at least a winning record no matter what. Once again, John, just like in the regular season, I'm doing well. I'm beating the books, but I'm in second place. But I still have three games to catch you, and you're up first for the first game of the weekend.
Yeah, I'm now up to a documented 53, 35, and 4 for the NFL season, wow, which is a silly 59.7%. I might be good, but I don't believe I'm this good. fair. So keep that in mind, listeners. I'll start with Chiefs -7.5 versus the Titans. I'm not sure why I get a hook here, because the Chiefs have their warts and the Titans have Derrick Henry. Kansas City lost its heartbeat for about 20 minutes last week, and it could be difficult to get back to sea level after that. You know, teams that score 50 points in a playoff game tend to fare very badly than the following week. And I remember the Titans crushing a better team last week. So Tennessee it is, and we may well have something to talk about when we each spend Super Bowl weekend in Nashville.
Yeah, we might. I have a chance here to make up ground on you, because I am on the opposite side of this one. I'm not with you here. I've been riding the Titans all playoffs, picking them to cover both weeks, betting on them on the money line both weeks. But that stops here. To me, I look at that Chiefs game last week as, you know, they had their hiccup in the first quarter, bounced back and got it out of the way. Now, there is a world in which the Titans score first and can lean on Derrick Henry and keep this close, but I think it's more likely that the Chiefs offense does some damage in the first half and Tennessee has to throw the ball more. Not to mention, at some point, Henry's got to kind of hit the wall after three straight insane workloads, right? This is including the final week of the regular season. It's basically, I haven't looked it up, but somewhere, I think, over 600 yards the last 3 weeks on the ground. I just, at some point, your legs wear down a little bit. So I'm kind of expecting a comfortable Chiefs win on Sunday. And in the later game, the NFC Championship, it's the 49ers, also favored by 7.5 at home against the Packers. I'm by no means a believer in the Packers. If they get to the Super Bowl, they'll be among the more mediocre recent teams to reach the big game, but I think they have what it takes to keep this one close. Great quarterback, one of the three best wide receivers in the league in Devontae Adams, solid running back, decent defense, not nearly as good as San Francisco's D, but good enough, especially against the pass. I think 7.5 points is just a tiny bit too much. I don't see Aaron Rodgers going down without a fight here, so I'm taking Green Bay.
Yeah, and so not to repeat myself, but I'm not sure why I get a hook here, because the 49ers have their warts and the Packers have Aaron Rodgers. I was not dazzled by Jimmy Garoppolo last week. And, you know, this meme about how Aaron Rodgers is no good in NFC title game, that suffers kind of from sample size issues, frankly. So, yeah, another nail biter where I get the extra nail. I'll take it.
All right. So you're on both underdogs against the spread. And so I will need the Chiefs to cover the 7.5 in order to head into the Super Bowl with the two of us tied for the postseason. Otherwise, if you get the Titans, you've got it locked up going into the Super Bowl. And that'll do it for this episode of Gamble On. Thanks to everybody out there for listening, and thanks again to our guest, Representative Brant Iden. You can find me on Twitter at Eric Raskin and John at Bergen Brennan, and follow US Bets at US_bets. Go to usbets.com for all the latest news and analysis from the world of gambling, and subscribe to this podcast on SoundCloud or on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. And with that, John, please do your thing and take us out.
Yes, Eric, on the long flight to San Diego last week, I bought a copy of the New Yorker magazine to pass the time, and there's an astonishing story in it. It's called World Without Pain. There's a 72-year-old Scottish woman, and she's unaware of what pain, rage, dread, grief, anxiety, or fear are all about, because she had never experienced any of them. And yes, this digression will circle back to gambling, I promise. But I will just add, it's mentioned that as a child, just Joanna Cameron, she fell and hurt her arm while roller skating, had no idea she'd broken it until her mother noticed that it was hanging strangely. So she's a rare bird. She's not alone. And on the pain front, I can relate, actually. At age 13, I ran full speed into a nun's park car during a parking lot touch football game, and I bounced back about 10 feet. I finished the game and found out later I had a broken collarbone.
Wow.
No pain. Yeah. I had broken about four different fingers, once on a baseball bat hop, another in a volleyball incident. I was kicked once and can't remember the other one. No pain. I've had stitches several times. I got eight. In my foot, I kicked a beer can in high grass that contained a hidden broken windshield. Yeah, that was kind of bloody, but no pain. A 270-pound left fielder once landed on this center fielder in a heap, crushing my hand. I continued that co-ed softball game and caught the last out with the mangled hand and glove. I then went out for the post-game festivities, stuck a block of ice on the hand, went to sleep, woke up the next day to a hand twice the normal size. Turns out I had broken two metacarpal bones. Still, no pain. 5 years ago, I had a hernia operation. Apparently, there's an easy way and a hard way to do that. I was scheduled for the easy way, I guess for the lack of discomfort I showed. Halfway through, they had to switch it to the hard way. My surgeon said that it never happened in 14 years of operations, which I took as a badge of honor. So after a week, they have you revisit the surgeon and provide an update. And receptionist seemed amenable to listing a date as long as a patient liked for return to work, frankly. She asked what she should list as my return date. I said, how about now? And she said she'd never heard that before. Last thing, I was told a couple of years ago that I have severe osteoarthritis. I said that sounded like something I would know about, right, if I really had it. My rheumatologist pointed out to four of my fingers that had somewhat awkwardly regrown bone to replace lost cartilage. She explained that typically is rather painful, and I agreed that that sounds really, really painful, but she told me it's already done, so I missed it. And now we're back to gambling, yes, I promised. The author didn't ask this 72-year-old woman if she places bets, but I doubt it, not only because she's a 72-year-old Scottish woman, but gets to something perhaps profound about our gamblers out there. This woman is impervious to anger or frustration. I'm not, by the way. So if she had the Redskins with the points and they lead the Eagles late in the game, only to fall slightly behind and then still covering, then there's a meaningless final play, extra Eagles touchdown, fumble, the cost of the bet, she no doubt would just shrug and move on. You know, regret is not in her vocabulary. That sounds tempting at first, right? But could you fully enjoy gambling if you can't fully or even partly digest the angst that comes from a bad beat? Can you feel true joy when a long shot comes in at the racetrack if you're unable to suffer when brutal circumstances steal the money right out of your pocket? So is she the lucky one, you know, or are you? Put another way, can you have the thrill of victory without the agony of defeat? It's kind of a metaphysical question, Eric. And with that, I'll once again say, until next time, gamble on.